National Radio Club.
Heidi Exers, welcome to Market Scope for April 2014, as we start our 29th year of the DX Audio Service. It's also another anniversary. It was 50 years ago that ships sailed into waters off the UK coast, and pirate radio was born. Let's give a listen.
Years of offshore radio. It's hard to believe that if you were a teenager in Britain wanting to listen to pop music prior to the Easter weekend of 1964, there were only two choices. The BBC Light program, which broadcast only a couple of hours of pop music per week, or the nighttime programs of Radio Luxembourg, with its characteristic fading. However, that was all about to change. During March of 1964, the newly fitted radio ship, the MV Fredericia, slipped quietly out of Greenore Harbor in Ireland and set sail for southern England, and anchored in international waters off the Frinton, Essex coast. The ship, now renamed the MV Caroline, began broadcasting on Easter weekend of 1964.
You're tuned to Radio Caroline on 199, your all-day music station. This is Simon D talking to you on behalf of all of us on Radio Caroline, here 4.5 miles away from Felixstowe. Now, what can I tell you about the station? Well, our technical equipment, I suppose. Firstly, the transmitters are made by Continental Electronics in the States and are 10 kilowatts each, two of them, costing about £50,000 each. And they will shortly be looped together, I expect, to give us a stronger signal when all the boffins are finished working on them. The studio itself consists of various equipment, tape recorders, record players, of course, basically, and a mixer. The record players are made by Gates, costing about £500 each, and the Ampex tape recorders, I don't know the cost of those, I think they're about £1,000 each. Got about five of those. Now, the antenna, well, that's folded dipole aerial, which doesn't mean much to me, probably means more to you. It's 168 feet high from the deck, or near 200 feet from sea level, I suppose. It is, in fact, the tallest mast on a ship in the world, one piece. Costs a lot of money. Generators, well, of course, they supply the power not only for our signal, but also for the ship. They're made by Mercedes-Benz. There are two of them downstairs. No, three, actually. There's another one in the engine room. Transmission hours. Well, as you know, we go from 6 o'clock in the morning till 9 at night, and from 5 past midnight till 3 a.m. at the moment, making, 18 hours a day, or 17 hours 55. We shortly go over to 24 hours, I expect, when we're better organized. Studio staff, radio staff, well, there's four DJs, about five electronic brains mixing with their work with panel operating, engineer side. We all do shift work. At the moment, we are just about to start a shift work on the DJ side anyway, of 2 weeks on and 1 week off. The crew number about 11, I think, 12 perhaps, with the cook and, of course, the captain, who's up there on the bridge most of the time. Record library, about 8,000 records, and many miles of tapes, which, of course, we change every so often when we find a tune we like. Well, you know, we're here to stay. We've managed to fight the British government and win, and the GPO and the customs and generally everybody else. And thank you once more for your interest in our station. And from me now, and all of you, to all of you, from all of us, bye-bye.
1 month later, the MV Caroline was joined by another radio ship, the MV Mi Amigo, which, a few weeks later, began broadcasting as Radio Atlanta on May 9th, 1964.
You're in tune with the right side of radio, the good ship, Radio Atlanta, operating to you and everyone else at 200 meters. Ladies and gentlemen, this is the pick of the past.
If I were a tower of strength, I'd...
Well now, hello everybody. And welcome back in here to more music, more often here on the good ship Radio Atlanta, 200 meters on yours and everybody's radio dial. Johnny Jackson's in here, Mike's eye with you. Till now, let's get some music going. Remember this one rubber ball, I'll come bouncing back to you.
Within weeks of the Atlanta opening, two more radio stations had taken to the air. Not from radio ships, but from disused Ministry of Defense forts in the Thames Estuary. Radio Such from the Shivering Sands Fort, and Radio Invicta from the Red Sands Fort.
Bruce Chanel, and he said, "Hey, baby," and "Hey, baby," you're tuned to Radio Such on 197 meters, the only station that doesn't pretend to swing and doesn't pretend to be with it, but we really are with it. Here's Sammy Davis, and he says, tenderly, "This is Radio Such on 197 meters, and this is Paul Elvey, and I do hope you've joined us because we're going to have a real swinging session today. We've got loads of people here, as you probably know if you've been listening the last few days. I've been on my own here for the last few days, but yesterday I was suddenly bombarded with loads of people, and it was very pleasant it was as well. There's Uncle Reg himself in person with his delightful daughter Sue and two helpers, Colin and Stephen, who have both been working very, very hard here, helping us get the station up to scratch, and they're all doing a great job.
You're in tune to Radio Invicta, broadcasting on 306 meters on the medium wave. Radio Invicta, your good music station, brings you music 13 hours a day, 7 days a week, from 5 a.m. until 6 p.m.
July 1964 saw the Caroline and Atlanta organizations merge, both taking the station name Caroline. The Mi Amigo ship remained anchored off the Frinton, Essex coast, and broadcast as Radio Caroline South. The MV Caroline upped anchor and set sail to her new destination, Ramsey Bay in the Isle of Man, broadcasting as she went. Once anchored in the bay, the station began broadcasting as Radio Caroline North.
Ray Martin and his orchestra, and Davy Crockett, of course, from the film of the same name. It's now 6.5 minutes after 2 o'clock on the late night show from Radio Caroline. And we are sailing south, and at about 6 o'clock in the morning, we'll be opposite Dover. Right now we're sort of just in the Thames estuary, in fact, beaming straight down the Thames into London. And the Mojos say, why not tonight?
In October of 1964, Reg Calvert took over Radio Such and renamed it Radio City.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, lads and lasses, just 1.5 minutes now before news and weather together time from the Tower of Power Radio City. Paul Kramer's along at 11 to tell you what's been happening in this wonderful world of ours. And I'll be back. So don't go away now, will you? This is Radio City broadcasting on 299 meters in the medium wave band. The time... it's 11 o'clock.
Radio City News, as it happens, every hour.
This is Paul Kramer reporting, London. Time check on 1.5 minutes past 11 o'clock. The next news from the Tower of Power at 12 o'clock this morning.
On the 23rd of December, 1964, regular transmissions began from the former U.S. minesweeper SS Destiny, now renamed MV Galaxy. The station was set to become the most professional and successful of all the pirate stations. That station was Radio London.
Come on, sing along, sir.
Listening to the happy sound of wonderful Radio London, bound to cheer you up if you stay tuned throughout the day. The time is 7 o'clock, let's weather check.
Here's the latest weather words on wonderful Radio London.
And the weatherman says that the country is in for a cold spell. Oh my goodness, it's all down to the old winter woolies out again, ladies. And if you're just woken up, hello, good morning. It's 3.5 minutes past 7 o'clock. Here comes Jack Edward to sing the number 9 song this week in our Fab 40.
If you're
March 1965, pirate radio was 1 year old, as Caroline celebrated her first birthday with a little help from some of the stars she helped make.
Hi, this is Ray Conniff saying hello to all my friends who listen to Radio Caroline. Stay tuned for more good music.
Well, hi there, this is Cliff Richard. I'm glad to have the opportunity, on behalf of myself and the Shadows, to wish Radio Caroline a very happy first birthday. It doesn't seem at all a year ago that I wished you a grand opening. I hope you have many, many years. I'm sure you will have. And I shall be even happier if I hear my own little records played every now and then. Thank you very much. I hope you have a great year ahead.
Hello, this is Roy Orbison, and I would like to extend my birthday greetings to Radio Caroline, the first anniversary, and I hope the next few years are as successful as the previous one, and a big happy birthday.
Hi, this is Bobby V, and I'm happy to be with the many stars wishing Radio Caroline a happy birthday. I hope you have many more.
Also in 1965, Reg Calvert's Radio City increased its transmitter power to 10 kilowatts. Radio Invicta had a name change to King Radio, and eventually went on to evolve into the easy-listening radio station Radio 390. From the Knock John Fort off Southend-on-Sea, Radio Essex began broadcasting. Britain's pirate era was now in full swing. By the end of 1965, a former lightship anchored off the coast of Scotland, and a few minutes before midnight on December 31st, Radio Scotland began broadcasting.
Radio Scotland time is now just gone. 1 minute past 9 p.m. Courtesy Hannah, Vigilers of Byers Road in the west end of Glasgow.
On 242 meters in the medium wave band, this is Radio Scotland.
By 1966, pirate radio advertising was big business, with all the stations competing with each other for advertising revenue. One of the most memorable advertising campaigns was Radio Caroline's Cash Casino, which was broadcast on both the North and South ships.
Within the next few minutes, some lucky Radio Caroline listener could win as much as £2,220. Let's play Caroline Cash Casino. Presented by these quality products: Findus Frozen Foods, Galaxy Chocolates, Libby's Canned Food Products, Nabisco Shredded Wheat, and BP Wines. This segment is brought to you by Findus Frozen Foods.
Save! Save! Save on Findus Fish Fillets and Findus Fish Steaks.
Hello there, this is Bill Herring with you on this old Saturday morning, the 18th of March, 1967, by golly. And in the jackpot, we find £2,200. In our first letter, it comes from 27 Peach Avenue, Silkmore in Stafford.
May 1966 saw the arrival of another broadcast vessel. Anchored off the Essex coast, the Laissez-Faire was different to all the other ships in that it contained not one, but two stations. The easy-listening station Britain Radio on 355 meters and Swinging Radio England on 227 meters with a brash American Top 40 format.
The bright sound of the smart ship. Britain Radio.
The bright new sounds of Radio Britain coming your way, testing the first day, May 3rd, 1966. This is Radio Britain. The Johnny Mansingers up now on Radio Britain.
Hallmark of quality, Britain Radio.
You're listening to the bright new sounds of Britain Radio, serving the British Isles. This is Gene Pitney with a flashback from 1965 on Radio Britain. It's called I'm Gonna Be Strong. Testing for Swinging Radio England. Hi there, this is Rick Randall with a brand new sound for the British Isles, where the action is.
Stay with the fun.
Woo-hoo!
cheer all the kids on, playing in Radio England.
The fun spot.
We have a few things here we'd like to give you. Just a preview of the new sound which will be coming your way on Swinging Radio England, where the action is.
Swinging Radio England, where the action is.
Our new station for the British Isle, Swinging Radio England. Time now is 3:30 on May the 3rd, 1966. First day on the air for Swinging Radio England. Here's Gene Pitney to sing. Ah, oh, this is so nice. From out on the Hall of Fame. This is called...
It Hurts to Be
Loved. A month later, in June of 1966, another ship dropped anchor a few miles off the Scarborough coast. The station, Radio 270, broadcast from the Oceana 7 with a format of continuous pop interspersed with news and weather. The station soon became popular with listeners in the northeast of England. Everything seemed to be going well for the pirates, with all the stations proving popularity with the British public, if not with the British government, who was becoming increasingly anxious about the illegal stations. However, that was about to change. In the early morning of June 1966, a retired major, Oliver Smedley, a business associate of Reg Calvert, the owner of Radio City, sent a group of men to Shivering Sands, where the station was located, with the intent to board and take over the station. Smedley was in dispute with Calvert and claimed ownership of Radio City. That same evening, Calvert visited Smedley's house to confront him. A scuffle took place between the two men, during which Smedley shot and killed Calvert. The police were called, and Smedley was charged with murder, but was later acquitted on the grounds of self-defense. The Radio City incident made the front pages of the world press, and it had also had the effects of speeding up the government's legislation against the pirates. On the 21st of September 1966, Radio 390 was issued a summons for operating a radio station under the Wireless Telegraphy Act. Also issued a summons was Roy Bates, the owner of Radio Essex. Both the summons were based on the fact that the stations were broadcasting within British territorial waters and were subsequently ruled illegal and forced to close. November 1966 produced more bad news for the pirates when Radio England closed down. It had never managed to capture the imagination of the British public, or, more importantly, advertising revenue.
And this, of course, is the last 29 minutes of programming that Swinging Radio England will bring to the listening area of Great Britain. For this next half hour, we intend to do our very best to entertain you with every one of the jocks who has ever been on Swinging Radio England. From Phil Martin, from Errol Bruce, from Bruce Wayne, and Roger, you're the oldest man here. Come on around and say the final words before we say goodbye for SRE, Swinging Radio England.
Put away my handkerchief.
Oh, well, thanks, and user Bill Berryard, Bunches, for moving in, but I should be at the Uppercut Discotheque 3 nights a week, which is in London, so come down there. That's a free plug for him, no, but this big boxer guy runs it, Billy Walker, and he says, if I don't work there, he's going to smash my face in. No, but anyway, I want to hope. You'll come down there and see me, and thanks for tuning in for 6 very boss months. So from Roger Day, hi, hello, are you, and bye, hello, are you tonight. Bye-bye.
At the end of February 1967, another station closed down. Britain Radio, from the laissez-faire, was replaced by Radio 355. On July 14, 1967, the Lord Chancellor announced the royal assent to the bill banning the pirate radio stations in the Lords. It hoped to bring the Marine Broadcast Offenses Act into force on August 15th. Radio Caroline announced that it would defy the British government and continue broadcasting after August 15th. However, the American-backed Radio London announced that it would not continue to broadcast and it would close down at 3 p.m. on Monday, August 14th. After broadcasting for only a few months, Radio 355 announced that it too would close on August 5th at midnight. By Monday, August 14th, only four stations were left broadcasting. The first station to close was Radio London, and at 2 p.m., they began their final hour.
Broadcasting, it is almost certain that the Marine Offenses Bill designed to stop offshore radio will come into force tomorrow. As a result, Radio London will be closing down at 3 o'clock this afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock.
And now, Radio London presents their final hour.
Greetings to this is Keith Skews, and saying, rather sadly for the second time around, goodbye. It was only some 3 weeks ago that I said cheerio before I went off on holiday. And now, having returned today and duly been suntanned on both my left and right kneecap, I find that the Marine Offences Bill is about to become law. The Marine Offences Bill, which forbids British subjects to serve on offshore radio stations. 15th of August 1967 is indeed a very black, a sad day in offshore history. During the past 3 years, the pace and interest in radio has more than trebled, and the sales of radios have quadrupled. Offshore has been directly responsible, offshore radio, that is. Over the past 3 years, a large number of pop stars have been born and a number of new record companies launched. Moreover, the listeners, you at home, have been well satisfied with the sounds emanating from your radio sets. Well, I briefly just like to express my sincere thanks to Philip Birch, our managing director, and also to Alan Keane, the program director. Alan, incidentally, who doesn't want his name mentioned. And to all the Radio London staff at 17 Curzon Street, as indeed to the captain and crew of the MV Galaxy, the disc jockeys and the engineers. We mustn't forget the cook as well on board. All have helped to make 1966 and 1967 very happy years in the life of one Richard Keith Skews. And I'd like to thank you at home, the listeners to Radio London, most sincerely for being absolutely wonderful and for allowing me to lurk locally inside your radio sets. Well, Keith Skews signing off now, wishing you everything you wish yourselves.
Some mention has been made of the fact that mine was the first voice to be heard on Radio London. It will also be the last in regrettably few minutes from now. Big L time is 3 o'clock and Radio London is now closing down.
The next station to close was Radio 270, followed at midnight by Radio Scotland. All attention now turned to Radio Caroline. As midnight approached on board the Mi Amigo, disc jockeys Johnny Walker and Robbie Dale were about to make broadcasting history.
Many listeners have just joined Radio Caroline South on 259 meters in the medium wave band.
They've joined us because a sister of offshore commercial radio has just gone off the air, Radio London on 266. This is Robbie Dale, and I've just been listening to the last few minutes of Radio London's transmissions. I've just heard her close down, and this is the time when Caroline would like to say thank you to Radio London and all the staff and DJs for the service that they have given you over the past year, two and a half years. We are now alone, but we will survive, and we hope and trust that we can give you, the listener, the same service that Radio London have been giving you for the last 2.5 years. And we welcome you to Caroline South and give our sincere thanks to all the staff on Radio London and wish them all the best in the future. And as a small token of appreciation for their service in the past, we would like to have just a 1 minute silence, and then we'll come back with sounds and take up the fight for free radio. This is Caroline South on 259 meters in the medium wave band, the continuing sound of free radio, now the one and only, and your future in commercial radio.
On free radio, on Caroline, your radio station. Everybody needs somebody to love. Now is the time to turn on that tape recorder to capture for all time the historic moment when Radio Caroline enters a new phase of broadcasting. On Radio Caroline, that's Ken Booth singing you a song called Puppet on a String, brand new thing released by the Studio One Record Company. We have 30 seconds to go until midnight.
A new idea in smoking. Come in on the move to Menthol Fresh Consulate. Consulate combines menthol freshness with rich Virginia tobacco and a firm white filter. Menthol Fresh. Cool, fresh Consulate. Cool as a mountain stream. By Rothmans of Pall Mall.
This is your radio station. This is Radio Caroline. It is now 12 midnight. Caroline would like to extend its thanks to Mr. Hal Wilson and his Labour government for at last, after over 3.5 years of broadcasting, recognizing this station's legality. It's right to be here. It's right to be broadcasting to Great Britain and the continent. It's right to give the music and service to the peoples of Europe, which we have been doing since Easter Sunday, 1964. And we, in turn, recognize your right as our listener to have freedom of choice in your radio entertainment, and of course that Radio Caroline belongs to you. It is your radio station, even though it costs you nothing. And as we enter this new phase in our broadcasting history, you naturally have our assurance that we intend to stay on the air because we belong to you and we love you. Caroline continues.
It was now August 15th. And Radio Caroline South, now Radio Caroline International, was now on her own. The first pirate had now become the last. 50 Years of Offshore Radio was written by Vince Marks. I'm Fred Volby for the DX Audio Service.
Thanks for that great look back at pirate radio in the 60s. Do you think pirate radio should find a way to thrive in the U.S., promote the development of more live and local programming? That would be absolutely awesome. Remember, if you have anything interesting going on in your radio market or in your travels, why not share it with the membership here on MarketScope? Send your recordings to me, Phil Wayne, at 7545 County Highway 71, Harpster, Ohio, 43323-9364. It is your generous contributions that help us keep doing what we do here at the DX Audio Service, and we are very appreciative. What do we do here anyway? If the top secret master plan is still in effect, here are the musings from the members.
Once again we play the great tune of yesterday. What's the cream of the crop? What's the pick of the pops? Here's the WISH Golden Record.
This is Musings of the Members.
Wonderful WISH!
Tom Dimeo in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Congratulations, happy birthday, happy anniversary, whatever, to the DX Audio Service, 29 years, issue 350 in number. Hard to believe, Fred, and I've heard every one of those 350 issues. You wanted us to reminisce about a few things. Several things come to mind. One is maybe the air check that Paul Smith did from his airplane, or some of the April fun issues that you did with a little bit of leg pulling, an air check of John Bowker, where Julie Muller was the lady doing news for him, and she later became a network newscaster, maybe with two different networks at different times, of course, and the issue where you had several celebrities who had been disc jockeys, Jeff Christie, Rush Limbaugh in Pittsburgh, Morton Downey Jr., who I think was Wild Child or Wild Kid or something like that, perhaps in San Diego, and there were lots of others. Very good. Thank you for all the entertainment, all the current editors, those who volunteer to read articles, and past editors. Thank all of you for the great magazine. And to Dave Albert's question on 1330, probably WHOT, Campbell, Ohio. Jerry Starr, of course, worked there for a long time, and he, I believe, did the first AM switch on the DX Audio Service. And I also read an article on the NRCDXAS.org website where Dick Biondi was one of the first announcers on WHOT in 1955 when they first started on 1570. Thanks for all the fun. Good memories, too. I'll be interested to hear what others have to say about past reminiscences. Thank you.
This is Tim Hendel with two comments. The AM switch WUST in Washington was mentioned as being on 1020. Well, I've always known WUST on 1120. Did they change frequencies and somehow that one slipped by me? Secondly, regarding Mike's comment, the idea that radio stations would take listener requests is really kind of ridiculous. You'd have music all over the map if they played what listeners asked for. I don't think there are or ever were very many stations that on a regular basis took listener requests, and I don't understand why Mike would expect that they ought to.
Hello, Fred. This is Ernie Holt in New York City. It seems to be, I don't know what your opinion is, but it seems to be I keep my radio on something called the True Oldies Channel, and as much as, unfortunately, I guess it's national, what is your opinion of the fact of something that only plays records from the 60s and 70s, and on Sunday night, they play the 50s and 60s. Vicar Montagnier says that they do have a live DJ, but the problem is that is he live if he's only in one city? Because he says live from the mothership. That doesn't really tell you where it is, but if you can get it, even online on iHeartRadio, it's pretty good for what it is. Check it out. This is Ernie, good DX. Bye.
This is Mike Lance in Aventura, Florida. Happy anniversary, DX Audio Service. Thank you for a great magazine. I've been a member of the DX Audio Service for quite a number of years, and I have attended 23 National Radio Club conventions. I've met so many wonderful people that I've been friends with for many years, and some of the people that I've been friends with are the following: Uni Wislowski, John Bowker, Fred Volby, Dave Morthouse, Mark Marino, Scott Feibusch, the late John German, the late Pat Cassidy, John Kalaman, who I used to listen to when I lived in Boston, and he worked on AM 740 WCAS. Thank you very much for the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service, and thank you for giving great information to the blind and partially sighted community. May you have many, many more happy years of great publishing. Thank you.
And that is our musings to the members on this edition of the DX Audio Service. And if you'd like to muse, give us a call at area code 419-741-0205 anytime. Keep it brief and to the point so everyone has a chance to speak. Keep it positive, and multiple calls may be edited or combined into one call in order to save time on the magazine. Now to some answers. Tim, you're absolutely correct. WUST is on 1120. Our copy had him on 1020, which was kind of puzzling. And I guess in the haste of writing the script, we just passed along the error to you. Ernie, yes, I love oldies. And unfortunately, in our region here, we don't have a local oldie station. We have to go about 90 miles north to get WRQN out of Toledo, or about 90 miles south to get WDSJ out of Greenville, Ohio, on 106.5. That's the only oldie stations around. Unfortunately, I can't get them here in the house. I can get them in the truck, but a lot of times I just fire up WNRC and get to play my own music, if you know what I mean. Hey, Mr. Mark Dernberger's in Studio B. Mark, do you have something?
Mark Dernberger here in the Musings control room to answer Tim Hendel's question about the WCCO announcer. No, the fellow who did the commercial was not Dick Chapman. The fellow who blew the commercial was a guy named Jurgen Nash. And Jurgen and Dick Chapman couldn't have been more opposites, even though they did work together. Jurgen had that mellifluous, deep baritone voice that just drew you in when he started to laugh. Here's Jurgen at 5:30 in the morning. The other voice you hear is Farm Director Maynard Spies.
Right now in the Twin Cities, 33 degrees, wind from the west, 14 miles an hour. The humidity is 69%, very light snow. The Weather Bureau radar indicates scattered light snow in the same location as at 5 a.m. Therefore, please continue to use the summary.
What you threw in the wastebasket.
You should have thought.
Wait a minute, I got it. I got it.
Had it in our little round file here.
Wait, if that at 5 a.m., the Weather Bureau radar indicates some patchy light snow in extreme eastern Minnesota. Holy smoke, if they had said use the one given at 4, I tell you, I'd have had it, because it would have been down another foot down in the wastebasket. Jeez, those are getting very cagey over in the Weather Bureau.
Thanks, Mark. And speaking of the musings line, we want to let you know about a planned outage of our telephone system here at the DX Audio Service. Our local telephone company, which is United Telephone of Ohio, is doing some planned maintenance that will start at the beginning of the month. Our telephone lines come down a rural section behind our home, and the lines have not been maintained in, well, decades. In fact, in the 29 years that I've lived here on Mackenzie Drive, I've yet to see a lineman or a service truck servicing our telephone lines. Well, starting at the beginning of the month, the telephone company will begin cleaning the dirt out of their cables. Now, according to Joe Klein of United Telephone Company, they'll start by blowing air into the wires in the downtown Lima switch.
and then they'll come out to the area code 419-741 and area code 419-228 exchanges. The problem is that sometimes the dirt comes out of the jacks and the cables, and they suggest because we have a lot of expensive equipment here that we bag the ends of the cables to our answering machines and our telephone. However, sometimes there is not enough places for the air to escape, or the connectors are just on too tight, and that compressed air builds up in the cables. The result is when the first person calls the Musings line or the office line here, they may get a puff of dust from their telephone in their face after the connection is made. We apologize for this problem as it's outside of our control. Now some news.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Audie Cornish. Wait, scratch that. Let's try it again with a little music. Ah, that's more like it. We're going to spend the next few minutes looking back at the golden age of radio. Our tour guide is a man named Ed Walker. And if you live here in Washington, D.C., and listen to member station WAMU on Sunday nights, you know his name and this music. Walker uses it to open his much-beloved program, The Big Broadcast, a mainstay in Washington for decades.
Well, here we go again, folks. Time for The Big Broadcast. And we hope you're ready for some old-time radio for the next 4 hours.
Among the old-time radio you're likely to hear...
Johnny Dollar.
That's usually first on Walker's list, then... Dragnet, of course. And the biggest hit with listeners? Gunsmoke. The Big Broadcast ranks first in its Washington time slot, and its audience is remarkably young for a public radio crowd.
I get a lot of requests, believe it or not, from kids. They have television, but I've gotten emails that say, we don't even turn the television on Sunday night. And they love it because with the good sound effects and everything like that, it is like somebody referred to radio as the theater of the mind, which it is.
Walker, who is 81 years old and was born blind, records the Big B, as it's known at the station, every Tuesday morning.
Hi,
hi
folks.
Hi there, Mr. Walker.
How are you?
Audie Good. Cornish.
You guys
want to
chat?
Yeah, all right. Make yourself as comfortable as you can.
We recently visited Walker in his studio to talk about the Big Broadcast and his earliest radio memories.
See, radio was everything to me. Not being able to see the sound on radio was important. Radio took the place of comic books and newspapers and the funnies and all that stuff. So I grew up with it.
Can you describe what you heard? What show really struck you and you remember?
Oh,
kind of describe what it sounded like.
The National Barn Dance. I was a little kid then. I was preschool. It was sort of like the Grand Ole Opry, but it was from WLS in Chicago.
Hello, 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 everybody everywhere. How's Mother and Dad and the whole family?
Somebody had a cowbell, and they'd ring this cowbell, and somehow my mother found one and gave it to me, and I would ring that cowbell. That was my first indoctrination into radio. So, like, I'd go to bed maybe after 10 o'clock at night. Bob Hope, I guess, was on at 10 o'clock, and some of the others that I would listen to as I went to sleep. But it didn't matter. I just listened to everything I could get.
Ah, thank you so much. How do you do, ladies and gentlemen? This is the Pepsodent Kid, Bob Hope.
Some of the kids that send me emails say, we put our transistor radio under the pillow and listen to your show until we go to sleep.
Do they remind you of yourself then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. What's old is new again.
Now, I read that you actually had your own radio show when you were a little kid.
Oh, yeah. I used to go down the street to the houses down, knock on the door and say, I'm going on the air in about a half hour.
You were your own promo guy.
Oh, yeah. My own rating service. The kids never took much of it, but it held me in good stead when I went to AU.
AU is nearby American University. There, Walker wanted to study broadcasting, but his tuition was to be paid for by a vocational rehabilitation service, and they didn't think a blind man could work in radio. He visited lots of campuses with radio stations and heard the same.
You can't do that. You can't do it. So I said, well, that made me more determined So Rehab said, we will sponsor you for your college tuition if you will agree to major in sociology. Then you can become a social worker. I said, well, there's nothing against social workers, but I don't want to do that. And they said, well, if you can prove to us that there's a future for you in broadcasting, we'll let you change your major. So I did. The first year I got started with a couple other guys, the campus radio station, which now is WAMU-FM. I'm proud of that fact. And it kind of holds you. And when, you know, when I was in college, being heard on the campus station made it easier to get dates, for example. So it's true. That opened a lot of doors for me.
Not only that, it was at AU that Walker met the man who would become a longtime friend, both off the air and on.
Happy birthday from Smuckers. Take a look, if you will. Elizabeth Woodard.
That's Willard Scott. Before the Today Show introduced him to the country, Scott was a radio man in Washington. And in 1952, he and Walker teamed up for a music and comedy show.
This is the Joy Boy Show.
Part of the microphone here, you old mic hog.
Oh, excuse me, was I too close to this? This is Ed Walker here.
Let's get the microphone right over here. I'm sick and tired of playing second fiddle to a
loudmouth.
We did things on the Joy Boys, like we made up a soap opera called As the Worm Turns.
And now, the continuing Twiddle Live story, As the Worm Turns, the story of La Hive today.
We both did different voices and everything.
What did you specialize in? What kind of voices did you do?
One I used to do was an old man's voice. I always called him Old Granddad, you know. He talked like this, you know, and he was old. That's my regular voice now.
For much of their two decades on the air, the Joy Boys evening show was appointment listening. But television eventually overtook radio, and the program ended in 1974.
Intro to Gunsmoke. A Liar from Blackhawk.
A Liar from Blackhawk. That's pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good one.
Okay.
Rolling.
3, 2, 1.
After years of hosting various local programs, in 1990, Ed Walker took over the show he hosts today, The Big Broadcast.
Join me for The Big Broadcast, won't you, from 6 to 10. We'll have Johnny Dollar, Dragnet, Gunsmoke, The Life of Riley.
You crackled a little there. Let's redo.
Yes, Master. Here we go. See, that's why I have Toby as an engineer.
Toby is Toby Schreiner, who has been on the other side of the glass for most of Walker's 23 years on the Big B. Walker reports to the studio with a handful of scripts he's typed at home on a Braille typewriter. But it's clear he doesn't really need them. He's a one-man radio archive.
I guess I was born in nostalgia. I don't know.
What you doing, Hutton?
Doodling. Can you doodle?
Can I doodle? I can't get it out of my noodle.
How come?
Because I love you, a bushel and a peck.
And here's the key to Ed Walker, and the reason he and the Big Broadcast have earned such a loyal following. He clearly loves what he's doing. When Toby plays a song from the coming week's broadcast, Walker whistles along.
About me.
Yes, about you.
My heart is leaping, having trouble sleeping.
And after beginning each broadcast with a quick run through the night schedule, Walker pauses for his signature welcome.
If you have anything that's bothering you in the coming week, don't worry about it now, or any problems that you had in the week just passed, forget them too. This is our time of the week, right now, the island between last week and the coming week. So settle back, relax, get yourself a cup of coffee or whatever you want, and get ready to enjoy the Big Broadcast.
Is that for the audience or for
That's
you?
That's for the audience.
It's a little bit for yourself?
For me, too.
Well, Ed Walker, thank you so much for speaking with us and letting us tag along for the taping. This was fun.
Well, I hope I didn't bore you all to death.
That's no, all. Of course not. I loved being on this little island with you.
Well, thank you, dear. That's good.
I love to spend each Sunday with you.
Ed Walker, host of The Big Broadcast from WAMU in Washington, D.C., and the program streams all week long at WAMU.org.
WRC's portable microphone is in the office of the Radio City NBC New York offices of NBC of the chief engineer of the National Broadcasting Company, Mr. Ray Cathode, who is chief engineer. Apparently, Mr. Cathode is working on some sort of experiment over there. Let's see what he's doing. We'll join him in just a second here. Mr. Cathode.
Don't bother me. I'm getting a message here.
Yeah.
You're our spark system. We don't have a very elaborate communication system. We use the old spark gap type Morse code ticker.
Well, the reason we wanted to talk with you today, sir, is if we... did the experiment give you some sort of a trouble there?
No, I just burned my hand on my cigarette lighter.
That's
smart. Oh,
you're
boy.
You're a very careful type man. Mr. Cathode, could we talk to you just a minute? We here at WRC Radio in Washington have heard quite a bit about the NBC School of Engineering.
That's correct. We have a very vital schooling center here in New York. Just as jazz comes from different parts of the country, you've heard of Chicago jazz.
Chicago-style jazz.
Yes, West Coast jazz.
West Coast-style jazz.
New Orleans-type jazz.
Yeah.
Well, there are many types of wowing, and we are the Wowing Institute.
The Wowing Institute of NBC?
That's correct.
I don't know if I know what you mean.
Well, it's quite an art to this. Every once in a while, an engineer, when you listen to the shows on NBC from day to day, you'll hear the records wow. That is, the first note sort of wows at the beginning.
You mean it sounds like it's at a slow speed
or
something?
Yeah, that's it. And all of these things have a different sound. The different shows from the different feed points of the United States. You know, NBC has feed centers in Washington, New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles.
These are the big production centers.
Exactly.
And you're trying to tell us, then, that we should be able to recognize the wows by the production center. In other words, if we hear it from Washington, it has a certain characteristic.
Exactly, yes. And well, any self-respecting radio listener should know these.
Well, this might be very interesting. Could you show us some, for instance?
I have a few tapes here from some of our best boys here that have done these. Now, first of all, this is what you call a Chicago wow. Listen to this.
This is a Chicago wow.
It's beautiful.
Well, that certainly shades of the National Foam and Harm Hour.
That's right.
There, and that certainly shows a Chicago-style wow.
That engineer on that show has his BW, his Bachelor of Wowing.
Bachelor of Wowing. And
correct.
He got this, of course, from many years of constant wowing.
Constantly.
During the early days of soap operas.
Correct.
How about the Washington School of Wowing?
Well, of course, Washington originates most of the news broadcast, the news on the hour. That has a sound all its own. It sounds like this.
Oh, that's quite interesting. That's the news on the...
Sort of a musical sound, don't you think?
It starts out right, but then it slows down. The engineer gets his thumb apparently caught.
Yeah, and that's quite an art. We have lost more thumbs that way.
That's certainly
too bad, really.
Very interesting. Well, how about any other schools of wowing that we might recognize?
Well, of course, there is the well-known Los Angeles West Coast School of Wowing.
Well, this should be very specialized because I understand Los Angeles and Hollywood, of course, the center where the stars perform, would be a very good place for Stardust to originate.
Exactly, and Stardust wows something like this.
Just being a novice myself at wowing records, not being an engineer, I would suspect that he put the record on at the wrong center and consequently got a off-center record.
Exactly.
This is the Los Angeles School of Wowing.
Yes, very... of course, now the final one would be the Madison Avenue type, or New York wow.
Very sophisticated New York style.
Oh, definitely.
That's
definitely
the flagship station, as we call it in our business.
Yes, that's right. And, of course, that is the home of Radio Central, where they originate Monitor every weekend, you know.
Yeah.
And their wow sounds something like this.
There is a little intermittent there, isn't there?
Sort of cuts in and out, you know.
Does this require the engineer to have complete coordination of his fingertips?
Absolutely. He's got to have a very, well, like trigger finger. You've got to hit that key just so to make it wow just the right way.
Well, this has been certainly interesting. We know, too, though, that local radio has certainly made definite inroads in the popular field compared to network radio. Could you tell us any of the threats that you found from local radio stations?
Yes, of course. The Top 40 station is our biggest competition. They don't need our school, you see, because the guys over there play these top 40 records, and nobody could tell the difference. They
you
just
mean,
naturally sound wowsy.
They have built-in wow.
Yeah, they sure do.
Sound wowsy.
Right.
Well, it's wonderful talking with you, Mr. Cathode, and we certainly hope we can get together again.
I'll see you later, and so long for wow. Baby, you a song
study. Radio consolidation not working. This article is from the website savingcountryradio.com. If you listen to the rhetoric of country music's major labels or the executives of country radio's biggest companies, most will tell you that all is rosy on the country radio front. But the research tends to always be on the side of country music fans sounding the warning bells that the genre has strayed too far away from its roots and is being unresponsive to the wishes and tastes of a wide swath of the country music listening demographic. Such was the case in 2012, when an Edison research study concluded that listeners want more classic country on radio. Edison researcher Larry Rosen, as part of the Country Radio Seminar in Nashville, said, "I believe that we as an industry have really made a mistake in our conception of our own stations. While many people don't want to listen to classic country music, some still do, and we've let them float away. We run the risk that we are just more and more pleasing to fewer and fewer people, until all we are is ecstatically pleasing a tiny, unsustainable number of people." This year at the Country Radio Seminar, Larry Rosen was once again sounding the warning bells about the viability of country music on the radio moving forward in the face of rapid consolidation, the evaporation of local and live programming, and the emergence of new technologies and services competing with radio, like Spotify and smartphones. Though things are looking very good for country music in general, country radio is another case, according to Rosen and Edison research. Despite 77% of people agreeing that country music is a significant part of American culture, and 73% of people agreeing that country music is becoming more popular, Larry Rosen says that country radio is in the fight of its life, and that voice-tracked, or non-live and non-local shows, are essentially a disaster for the radio industry. Why? Because country music's demographics are becoming much younger as the format moves away from the more traditional sound of the genre. Edison research found that the amount of 12 to 34-year-olds listening to country music positively surged in 2013 from 12% to 27%. But since millennials are more likely to consume their music through technological alternatives to traditional over-the-air radio, the future looks grim for the format. As country radio is abandoning older demographics in favor of a new sound, and the fans of the new sound are abandoning the radio format in favor of the new technologies, the amount of people country radio appeals to is getting slimmer by the minute. Another very interesting statistic Edison research found is that 62% of people believe too many country songs sound the same, once again calling concern to country music's current trend of male-dominated laundry list or bro country songs, and the limited amount of songwriters writing the majority of country music's current hits. The accumulative conclusions of Edison research speak to what Saving Country Music and other critics of country music's current trajectory have been saying for years, that country music is amidst a sugar rush of popularity that is statistically unsustainable and may result in not just creative, but economic burnout of the format in the coming future, especially on radio. So what can be done about it? According to Larry Rosen and Edison Research, country radio needs to double and redouble its efforts to feature live and local shows. The reason is because research into the listening habits and desires of country music's growing millennial population says that they favor buying local, and they like local personalities as part of their music listening experience. On-air personalities and programming custom-made for local tastes and local listeners is the strategic advantage radio has over services like Spotify and Pandora. It's never been more important to play up live and local, says Edison Research's Jane Charneski. But of course, this is the exact opposite of what is happening with country radio. Amidst a country music media arms race, the two biggest radio station owners in America, Clear Channel and Cumulus, are fighting it out for who can feature the best nationalized programming under the premise that it is cheaper to pay one DJ and distribute them across your entire radio network as opposed to paying local DJs at every radio station the company owns. But once again, this is just feeding the American consumer's flight from traditional radio. Though companies like Clear Channel are dramatically cutting costs through their consolidation efforts, the company reported a $309 million loss in the last quarter, compared to a $191 million loss in the same quarter the year before. So not only is it bad for radio's big consolidators, it's getting worse. It all is enough to leave the country music radio consumer baffled as to why anyone thinks the idea of radio consolidation will work. Dissent against radio for abandoning country music's traditional roots, for leaving behind local programming, and for trying to make money by cutting costs instead of trying to appeal to more consumers is not just a matter of taste or opinion. It is clear through specific statistics and research that these things are eroding country radio's long-term foundation. And the only way to stop it and to retain the solvency of country radio itself is to reverse course.
You're listening to the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service.
And if you think that this is the end of the DX Audio Service for April 2014, the joke is on you. We've got another hour of the DX Audio Service. Part 3 is coming right up.